IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polichuk.
Hi, this is Carl Polichuk, and I'm here with Dave Sobel at big SMB IT Pro Conference in Australia.
We're down under.
So, and Ryan is stuck in limbo somewhere.
Well, not only that, it's the best. He's in Bangkok. So, like, we're actually all on the other side of the planet at the same time.
Yeah, we're in the same time zone.
We are. We're like within one reach of one another, but completely opposite to all of our home. And we should say, this is the Killing It Podcast.
Killing It!
You see, we've been hanging out and riffing for a couple of days. So you guys have us all warmed up already.
And you get not the leftovers, but you get the warmed up version of all of this. So, all right. So, first of all, let me just take 60 seconds and say that your other podcast is kicking butt and taking names, and I'm totally loving it. So,
It's The Business of Tech. If you haven't seen it, find us at mspradio.com. Find us on all the podcatchers. Your daily 5 minute of what you need to know in the industry, not just the news, but a little bit of why you care.
Very cool. And we are coming to you live from the lobby of the SMB IT Pro Conference in Adelaide, Australia. Great group, fun crowd. It's one of the few conferences left where there's a huge amount of camaraderie because it's such a small group that see each other again and again and again for now 6 years.
And totally community-driven. This is all solution providers pulling together, building their own group. They run their own conference. It's entirely independent. It really has that cool vibe.
And they've kind of taken a couple of different steps at making it work, and I think they've totally nailed it at this point.
Oh, it's a great event.
Very cool. So what's our first topic? We're talking about drone technology, and I'm a member of the drone group at CompTIA, and so they're doing a semi-monthly meeting, and they just had their second meeting. And I found it really interesting because, you know, the whole question that we always have to talk about is, how does this actually fit into making money in our industry? And that's no longer a question. Like, that's an old question. It's moved off of the Gartner hype cycle altogether, right? So we can only guess where drones are on that because Gartner's not reporting it anymore.
Well, I mean, and it's in production. So I'll a quick moment. I reported on the Business of Tech earlier this week that UPS has their stuff going on in North Carolina where they're doing actual testing in a production environment on a medical campus. But this week, FedEx launched with Wing, one of Google's and Alphabet's subsidiaries, where they're the second company. They're doing it in Christiansburg, Virginia, and they're doing deliveries, commercial deliveries, to people's homes.
Nice.
So this isn't just a theory. This
You're
is
waiting
actually
for your
happening.
Burrito.
Yeah, I'm totally waiting on my burrito. The interesting thing about it, and the thing that I wanted to throw out as a trend, is you know, the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, has actually certified these two organizations as airlines.
Right.
And so there are actual regulations that give guidelines on the way this can be done at a production level to do it.
So it's interesting to me is that, because I know a handful, not very many, but I know some pilots. And once you are a pilot with a major airline, you can move to another airline fairly easily. And you have people who are primarily trained in the military who then go fly for commercial airlines.
Right.
That's going to repeat itself with commercial drones.
Well, it totally is. And the interesting thing about it is it'll follow the same model because while you're a pilot, you then also get certified on particular kinds of aircraft.
Right, exactly.
This is going to fall out exactly the same way in that you'll get certified on particular kinds of drones.
Well, and one of the things that happened is when they first started licensing people, they have this thing called Part 107. So if you get a Part 107 license, you can fly commercial drones in the United States. And so all these people did this, and it turns out most of them are not renewing their licenses. It's sort of like they thought there was going to be all this stuff, and they did it kind of too early in the life cycle.
Okay.
And now there's a lot of students who are taking these classes in high schools and community colleges. Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing.
Right? But only 20% of the students are taking the exams. So it's like they want to learn how to do this, but they may not be sold on the viability of actually being a licensed pilot. So the result is we have thousands and maybe millions of unlicensed drones out there.
Well, we know that's a real thing. I mean, this is certainly, I mean, it's a really burgeoning area of the industry where it's pretty if not leading edge, it's bleeding edge. It's
right.
somewhere on that edge. So we definitely know that these people are getting skills that are pretty early. It's not like you're going to get your drone license and immediately have your selection of jobs.
Right, right.
You know, but that's not to say it's not coming, particularly because the moment it becomes viable and these tests get figured out, they're going to roll out pretty fast.
Well, and the other development that I didn't know about until this CompTIA meeting is that corporations don't want to own drones. They don't, you know, even if they're doing landscape development or whatever, they want to hire a service that provides the drones, provides the pilots, deals with the licensing, deals with the video, all that kind of stuff. They literally want to buy a package
right.
from somebody who is taking care of all of the licensing and all of that, and all they have to do is pay a fee to the drone service provider, which is a real thing.
And I'd be completely remiss if I didn't say, doesn't this sound like something you've heard before? like this is following exactly the same pattern.
And there's this developing piece of it, which is the same as in the IT industry. Is this spend taking place as a corporate expense? Do they see this as a part of their company or just a service that they outsource? Like, you know, most companies don't have an in-house photographer. If
right.
they need to photograph or do PR, they hire an outside service. And so it's kind of like that, where mm-hmm. Very few companies say, hey, we need our drone division.
Right, exactly.
Right? I mean, you know, there might be a few really big ones, but...
And we're saying that my wife's a videographer. You know, in her industry, they actually are already doing that. There are companies that are specifically drone videography companies that get hired by those doing regular commercial television or doing production work on a movie or a spot or whatever. They're the people that know how to work the specific drones, how to get licensed, how to manage it from a permit perspective, and they come in as a specialization within a specialization.
Right, which is huge, because at the end of the day, that's where all the money is when you say, hire this guy because he knows how to, you know, whatever, videotape new golf courses or new, you know, do inspections on new high-rise construction or whatever it might be.
Right.
So.
And the interesting thing is we've outlined a lot of the ways where it's following the same model. There are some of the same problems. You're going to have, you know, you talk about there's a drone service provider. Hey, they've got all the same stuff, right? They have to manage the equipment. They have to manage his life cycle. They have to know where all that stuff is. They have
right.
to make
and
sure
who,
that it's,
who has the insurance and is it, do you buy insurance when you buy the whole bundle or...
Right.
Do you have to have your own?
Do you buy it on the equipment? Do you buy it on the people? It's all of the same kind of problem. So, again, this is following a pretty known pattern. It's early. I mean, am I telling people go get their drone license and become part of this? Not in mass.
But
there's opportunity here.
But the thing about the opportunity and kind of the question of whether you give somebody the advice to go into this, part of that is related to if they think that they've got a good approach to this, an angle where they can make money, I think they should absolutely spend time, you know, looking into that, because we are so early that this is when all the money is going to be made.
Oh, totally. I mean,
right? It will be 5 years from now, totally commoditized, and it'll be like, okay, so the last drone service provider had these three columns, and I picked the gold.
Yeah,
right?
if you see it, and you've got the opportunity, you see the need in your industry or your area or your specialty or whatever, if you see it, now is the time to move.
The other thing that's interesting to me is I know a lot of people who have done little things that they've added some drone technology to their business, but they are not licensed, and they know that this isn't something that they should be putting into an invoice or, you know,
right.
basically, you don't want to document that you're doing this illegally.
No, and you certainly don't want to learn on a customer's dime in this kind of way.
But the number was, let's see, 3.4 million drones will be sold this year, and there are about 200,000 licensed pilots.
Well, I don't think those numbers match. Let's observe that.
So,
I mean, unless each pilot is having what thousands of drones individually, there is definitely a disconnect.
Well, and the buyers are industries and government. Governments like the Forest Service and other agencies buy drone services all the time. It's like a line item for them because they can cover so much territory.
Right.
Right.
Totally.
And so it's interesting to think that there's this massive market and one of your potential clients is the government.
Well, so. I mean, and look, the government spends. You know, it has its own sales cycles. We could do a whole session on governments and engaging both at the, you know, the in the U.S., the federal, state, and local levels, and other countries. It's divided in similar kinds of ways. We could do whole deep dives into those markets, but they're a buyer, and they are definitely a buyer to consider.
So one of the things that I recently was looking at is, I don't know that I would ever own one of those really big drones. Like, I could totally see a 2-foot, a 3-foot drone, but those 6-foot drones that they fly into volcanoes that are $4,000, that might be a bit much for me.
Well, plus if I screw it up over a volcano, it's going into the lava and I lose it. That seems like the kind of mistake that I would make.
Yeah, maybe I'll become a drone insurance provider.
That's a good specialization. I bet you can charge a premium for that.
All right. Switch topics on me. Where are we going with number two?
Well, it's another week, and so that means Dave Catnip of Let's Talk Some Social Media. And so, I mean, you can't resist it. Look, there's been so much news this week regarding what's going on, particularly because Facebook has managed to be in the news almost every single day. Every single day we've been here, there's been a Facebook story of some significant piece. But I wanted to ask a bigger kind of commentary social question. I'm going to think, you and I will have the conversation, and I'm going to challenge listeners, like, I want to hear from people on this one, because I think it's pretty big. Facebook's been under a lot of fire because they have acknowledged in their policy that they're allowing politicians to lie.
Right.
And I'm using the bold statement of that you can tell a lie in an ad on Facebook, and they will happily take your money and spread it through their mechanism.
So are you telling me I can sell fake medicine and tell people it's real, and I can advertise on Facebook?
In fact, you can't, because that violates a different set of the policy.
But that's a lie.
I know, but this is very specific to politicians. In fact, that the policy is allowing for politicians to make untrue statements, and they've changed their policy specifically to exclude this class. You can't sell things in the same kind of way, because then you're going to run into the FTC and all of those kinds of things. But they have excluded politicians.
The political part falls under free speech versus commercial speech.
Well, let's observe. Free speech in the U.S. is a very very specific definition. I mean, the government cannot stop you from saying something. A commercial organization like Facebook is not a government.
Right.
Okay, so it is not covered under free speech. Now, they might have a principle of free speech as one of their values, but let's differentiate between the legal definition versus a commercial one.
And at the same time, I was thinking of the analogy of email. So back in the day, when I first started having email and letting my employees have it, you know.
Right.
The judges came out with the ruling that, look, if you want to hold your employees accountable for what they do in email, you must track all the email from all the employees.
Right.
If you say, I'm hands off and you can do whatever you want, but, you know, I don't want to be involved, then you can't monitor any employee email. And it's sort of, you have to make a choice one way or the other. Facebook is doing one thing with the left hand and one thing with the right hand.
So there's a couple of things I want to bring up on this, because the first is that exact inconsistency that I'm saying that Facebook's trying to have it both ways, and ultimately I don't think you ever get it right when you're trying to have both ways. It's important to observe that Facebook, from a revenue perspective, I've seen this as like 0.5% of revenue is political ads.
Right.
This is now, they make a lot of money, so the numbers are all very big. From a revenue makeup perspective, this isn't a massive business for them. They are explicitly choosing to have this headache for whatever reason.
Well, so I will tell you one thing. It may be a small piece of their revenue, but it's a huge piece of the conversation on Facebook, and it may suck people back in who were ready to wander off.
So now we get into the lies.
Now you have a larger audience that you can sell these legitimate ads to, where people can't lie to them.
Right. Exactly. Now, and look, now we're getting into the meat of the conversation. Is the, okay, so they're making an explicit decision that they want to allow this. how do we feel about this as a society, and why? I think it's an important thing to think about, the like why they're doing this, because you can start slicing at the political conversation, and I don't want to make this is not a politics podcast.
Right.
So what we're talking about here is the why, and how do we make sure that a system works correctly based on the outcomes we're looking for.
And part of it is, big picture, again, we do exist in a political world, but Twitter holds a certain position with regard to free speech in the United States, China, the European Union.
Right.
They're fighting the battle on all fronts. Facebook is fighting the battle, but not on all fronts.
No, they're not. Interestingly, they're not in the Chinese market. They've never been able to get in there, and so this is actually one area where they're not embroiled in the China portion of the
conversation. So they can stand tall on free speech, knowing that they're not going to lose
any
Chinese
business.
It is also a bigger picture of, like, do I want Mark Zuckerberg deciding what is appropriate speech?
Well, and this is where the point comes into. Is this Facebook's position, and I'm not defending, I'm just going to start, is that like they don't want to be that position, and they want a open dialogue of conversation and allow for that to happen, and they would rather trend that way. You can also look at it from the perspective of saying, you know, where does the line end if you're managing politics, right? So if you're going to start, if you're saying, well, we're going to manage politics versus, what does that mean? Does that mean a particular candidate's position, or what about the positions themselves, or what about people that are engaging?
In the classic broadcast medium, we had for many years this fairness doctrine,
right,
which said you take one political position, and even if you're the president of the United States and I'm just a member of Congress from the opposite party, I get equal time, and somehow that makes it all equal.
Right.
Which, of course, it doesn't.
Right, and so that started this bit. The reason I bring this all up is because I think it's worth us thinking about this from a systems perspective and trying to figure out how do you manage it? You're explicitly choosing to do it. The duck test doesn't work at scale. If I see it as a duck and quack, like, I can't judge everything this way. Where do we want these lines to be, and why? And I bring this up to our collective technology audience, because of all of the people, we're probably the best suited to look at it from a systems technology perspective.
One of the big differences is, like, let's just say, you know, like on broadcast media,
mm-hmm.
I can be broadcasting a speech of you, and then on the side, there are people literally in real time side-checking facts and posting up, you know, 80% true, 50% true, right? They can do all that. On Twitter, because of hashtags, I could basically be doing the same thing. I could be providing a service to, in real time, as long as you're using the hashtag and I'm using the hashtag, like, you can say something and I can evaluate the truthfulness of it. Facebook doesn't have a system for that.
Well, but maybe they do. So I'm going to bring up a very specific example around anti-vaccination. So it is, if you ever look, Facebook and some and the other social media platforms too have done a really effective job of fighting misinformation around vaccination. Why? Because some of their lawyers have made the determination that if something were to happen, they're probably going to be involved.
They could have a huge liability.
They could have a huge liability. And so, surprise, surprise, they found a way to solve that problem. We've also seen this now in terms of what happens around gun violence. Again, I'm not going to have a gun conversation. What I'm going to point out here is post-Christchurch, there was an incident in Germany where there was a shooting, and the social media engines were able to squash the live footage and live streaming.
That is more about not showing it at all. So if I post inflammatory stuff about this or that, they can find it and squish it. That's different from, I can blatantly put up ads that lie. Like, what are they going to automatically do about that? Flag, like, this is a political ad, and you may, you know, want to give 30 seconds thought to it before you actually believe anything.
Funny you bring that up, because they announced this week that on other things that are not coming from politicians, they are in fact going to flag false information from regular people. So what's actually coming out is that they're having almost two sets of rules.
So they could do it.
It appears that in some cases they could definitely do it. There are examples of them doing it.
Man. So big question is, where are we going with this? And actually, at some level, how do we help our clients make use of social media? Is that in any weigh our role? Is it useful to us to be involved in this?
So I think 100%. Like this is what, which is why I'm. I mean, it is Dave Catnip because I keep pawing at this because I actually think this is critically important for us as an industry to look at this. Yes, you can help your clients because first off, you are the people that help them understand how to use their data and how to use it not only effectively and safely, but I think ethically. And I think talking to them about outcomes that happen with data from an ethics perspective is super high value. It is a conversation that people need to be having about the use of data because it reflects on you as a company.
I also think there's a possible product here. Remember when Google used to sell these Google search servers that you could buy and put mm-hmm. into your office and would let you Google your own information very quickly? I can imagine a brand name filter that's not a spam filter, but it's a whatever, inflammatory bullshit filter, right? That it literally can limit what people see on Facebook and other social media based on criteria that are stored in some central database. Like I could see this device going between your router and your switch.
There's some personal projects that do that. I use a filter piece on my Facebook feed that filters out politics because I don't want to see it. So there you can see the beginnings of this going on right now. And I do bring this up because I think there's opportunity from a client perspective. I think the conversations about should we do something is as important as can we do something. Oh, and by the way, the should be is a hard question, but that means there's value there in having that conversation.
And we are out of time on this, but I just want to say, I want to put a tickler in for we need to have a conversation about the incredibly old people in Congress who can't understand any of this technology or how it relates to each other, and they are the ones making the laws.
Only 4% of people in the U.S. Congress have any kind of STEM background. just let you think that one.
And that's not a new thing, but... So there's that and the big data.
So our last topic of the day that we wanted to talk a little bit about was, it's kind of related actually, because it's about thinking about the background checks in the world of big data and where would the lines be. And you brought this one to the table because you were clearly thinking about it.
So I did background checks on my employees in the past, and you know, but it was basic. It was, you know, do they have a criminal record and do they have a clean driving record?
Sure.
And I've had, oddly enough, people who went all the way through the interview process and then turns out they had a DUI and I can't send them out to my clients' offices. And I think, okay, did you think I wasn't really honestly going to just do the check I promised I was going to do? But now you can have these checks, not just your background record, not just your criminal record, but which medicines you bought at the pharmacy mm-hmm. and which healthcare plan. If you bought an upgraded healthcare plan, that might mean something because now we can do research on all the people who bought that healthcare plan. And I'm not breaking HIPAA because I know nothing about what's inside of that. I don't know if you have this disease or that disease or
right.
how many surgeries you've had, but I know that you bought the upgraded plan, right? It's so huge, and it goes deep into what organizations do you belong to, and it's not quite McCarthyism, but it's like deep into everything you've ever done, every association, how you spend your money, how much gasoline you use.
Well, we've both been to a bunch of events this year. One of the big speakers has been at several of these. Has actually come from the background in spies. This is the golden era of surveillance.
Right.
This is a surveillance intelligence officer's, you know, dream scenario, is having the kinds of information that's available now. We as employers can look up anything we want.
Well,
social media checks are standard now.
And kind of our weird norm, but it's I don't know that there's any way around it, is everything is legal until it becomes illegal.
Right.
Right? So what happens is new technology emerges, governments on one hand and private agencies on the other hand, they go start exploiting it mm-hmm. to whatever extent they can until either lawsuits or laws get in the way and say, wait, you've gone too far. And so, you know, it gets back to the perennial issue is, where is your personal life? Where does it begin and end? Like, what are the boundaries and how much can I know? And, you know, you're tempted to say, well, there's no harm. Like, I have gout. What do I care if anybody finds out about it, right?
Right.
But that's like the tip of the iceberg. It's so much more information, and because they can generate these patterns, they can know things about you that you don't know about you.
Well, exactly. I mean, and that's ultimately the question. You look at something like Google. Google probably has the most detailed profile of any of us. Knows us better than our own spouses, probably, and life partners.
So, maybe Facebook does, but Google, because it owns everything, right?
Well, but more
so, Google knows what I've done on YouTube. It knows where I've gone on any blogger.
But it also knows every single question you've ever asked. Think about it from that perspective. The most trusted source on anything is you putting something into a Google search and asking it.
Right.
1 in 6 questions asked of Google have never been asked before. That's
wow.
That's a stat, like, in the history of mankind. Asked again. Asked before. So they know, based on every single search you've ever run, more about your fears, interests, life experience. Think about all of the information.
I want to go back to college and get a psychology degree based on Google searches.
Totally. You can understand. I mean, if we think historically, right, we would ask, you were in the 1400s, you would ask a higher power things of questions, right? Life questions.
Right.
But now you're concerned about your children and where they might, what's going to happen. Your first turn is probably Google.
Right. Well,
so
the reason I thought it was Facebook. So on Facebook, I choose to click the boxes that I listen to this music and I like that song and I go to this festival and I tag myself at this restaurant, right? I am giving up so much. And so when you want to do a search, like if you're going to buy an ad on Facebook, you're able to drill down into people who are, you know, left-handed enthusiasts of square dancing that eat Mexican food.
Right.
Right? Boom. Here's the ad for them. And that's all stuff where maybe I didn't intentionally do it, but I did give up that information.
You did
check those boxes.
Well, you did.
I did join those affinity groups where Google is a different angle. I love the angle of what are my fears? Like, what am I looking for? How do I stop this from happening? How do I fix this problem? Even if it seems mundane, you know, if you're Googling something on, you know, how to unstick the mechanism on this illegal weapon.
Well, right. But they know everything it is about, maybe from a medical perspective, because you've asked questions. They know the fears. They know what you're thinking about with your family. They know your secrets at some level because you've asked those questions of the search engine. So, you know, and that's just one piece, by the way. We've talked about Facebook knows you from a whole other angle.
Right.
You know, you've put information online. There's all these different ways where you can be looked at. You know, the premise of our initial statement here is where's the line from a background check perspective? I think we don't all know.
I think it's
not entirely defined.
I am not in any way opposed to an employer doing a background check.
Of course, yeah,
but
I'm not either.
The question is, what can they legitimately look into, and where can you believe that you have some privacy? And part of the discussion on one of the online forums that I was participating in is somebody said, somebody you know was like, hey, if people are hiding their background, that means something, and if I can't find them, even on social media, I won't hire them. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. I know people who are really good at managing their online persona.
Right.
And they may have a completely different personality that I will never see. My clients will never see. Maybe I want to hire somebody who's got that kind of discretion.
Oh, sure.
To actually control that. And there's two different animals.
Well, there's a whole class of people that are Secret Service people, that are State Department people, that are psychologists, that explicitly don't engage with these kinds of things.
That story about the Marriott Rewards program and finding how spies move around the world because they're all Marriott.
Right. So they're all Marriott Rewards. So you hack Marriott and then you match it to their names. There are people with differing levels of exposure online. You know, I think this is yet another area which is ripe for some kind of thinking and both opportunity here to help understand that, talk to clients about what you can do, but also there's opportunities for us as technologists to be involved with the conversation, saying like this is our recommendations. These are the way that we think it can be done.
So,
and I keep imploring, this is my theme all the time, is you know, ask what can go wrong.
Right.
Take the technology that you're working with.
Well, and what can go right? Because I was going to say, is there a way to create different kinds of background search recommendations to help your clients say, these people go, whatever, four layers deep. These people go into the really weird stuff and all the dark web and, right, you want a whatever, almost military-level background search, this is the company.
Yes.
If you just want basic, like, hey, give me a good idea whether or not this is a decent person, then that's a different search.
Yeah, and we've seen an offshoot of this. I mean, I've seen solution providers now that are certainly doing the sort of dark web scanning that are looking at it from the perspective of just keeping an eye on it. I think this is even wider. I think you can start doing, like, way more in this area if you want to go, you know, much broader.
So, and part of it is also the question of, in terms of, at least in the U.S., our Constitution, I have the right to assemble with anybody I want.
Mm-hmm.
So even if they're nasty, horrible people or you don't like them, I have that right. Should that affect my ability to get a job?
Well, the statement has always been that you have the right, but that is not free from consequences.
So I have the right. I have the right to be in the wrong crowd, but then I have to pay the consequences.
But you do have to pay the consequences. And you know, so for example, you have the right to live your life any way that you want. That also means that someone else has the right to make a decision about the way they want to hire you or not hire
right.
you.
Right. I did
that
have
is
a,
what it means.
A fun thing happened many years ago, about 10 years ago. We hired this one guy, interviewed really well, blah, blah, blah. Good story, the whole deal. And then when we actually were going through the hiring paperwork, got a copy, because in the U.S. you have to give a copy of your driver's license.
Right.
His driver's license picture. This guy was total goth. He had the makeup, spiked hair, and like you would never in a million years have picked him out as that. But he was like done up for his driver's license photo. And of course, the woman in the front office is like, I can't tell anybody this, right?
Right.
not my job, you know. But it was just a very interesting thing. And it's like a piece of his personality I never saw again.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we've asked a couple of really hard questions today. And I think one of the reasons why we're doing that is to actually start saying, I want to hear from you. We've heard from some listeners. I think next week we'll have our first listener topic.
Yay!
It's a great one because we have to do some research.
Which
is totally awesome because we get to go learn some stuff. You know, I think we want to hear from listeners on this. Like, we've asked a couple of interesting questions. Where is the perspective of people that are dealing with this technology every single day? You know, where are these lines? What are the kinds of things that we should be looking at as an industry to make recommendations?
And I think it's actually fun for me to be in this industry at a time when we're delving into something more interesting than whether or not this is a 3.1 megahertz machine or a 3.4 megahertz or whatever.
Oh, right? I know. These are deep philosophical questions versus
way more interesting
speeds.
Questions.
Way more interesting.
Yeah. So, all right. I think that's pretty much it for episode 31 of the Killing It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.